being a subscriber for quite a while, you just kind of eventually start taking it for granted.
I wish I could do that.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Ray, and welcome to the RayWenderlich.com podcast. In this podcast, we'll keep you up to date with the latest app development tech talk. Now, here are your hosts, Mick and Jake.
Hey, Jake, how are you?
I'm good, Mick. How are you doing?
Yeah, not so bad, not so bad. Just seen that Apple have finally announced the big media event for the Apple Watch, 9th mm-hmm. of March. Have you seen that?
Yeah. And I think I actually saw it from a tweet that you posted, that your prediction was that we'd see the actual hardware on April 3rd.
Yeah. So, I mean, the way I arrived at that, I think it's just over 3 weeks between the 9th and the 3rd of April. And that's the first Friday in April, and Apple tend to release new hardware on a Friday. Mm-hmm. And I think that also gives a pretty good lead time for developers to get their apps into the review queue. But I'm also mm-hmm. hoping as well, selfishly, that means that we're only going to get the GM between now and then, because uh-huh. that'll mean less updates to WatchKit by tutorials yeah. that we have to manage. Because we were panicking yeah. a bit when they said, when we were going for the February release date, and then Tim Cook said, you know, we're hoping to get it out sometime in April. We're thinking, oh, there might be at least, you know, two or three more betas between the release of the book and the actual GM of the SDK, in which case we'd have to, you know, do three more updates to the book in a fairly short space of time, which is something we don't usually have to manage, because the books usually come out after the SDK, or usually on the same day, really. I mean, that's what we aim for with the iOS by tutorial series.
Yeah. No, with this year with Swift, there was a lot more things that were breaking and changing as we were trying to work on getting this stuff ready for iOS 8 by tutorials. So, yeah, hopefully you won't have to deal with that with WatchKit.
Yeah, but you feel the pain then, because you were obviously in that one as well. That.
Yeah. So, did you see David Smith's post about the date? He basically said the same thing. He mentions that April 1st is like Apple's birthday or something. But he didn't think they'd do it on the first because it's a Wednesday, which I would think that would make sense.
I think he posted that like 20 minutes, half an hour after mine. So I got in there first.
Maybe he got the idea from you.
No, I think a lot of people are probably thinking the same, to be fair. And I know he's been watching it really closely, because he's obviously developed his apps. They look like they're ready to ship.
Yeah, will you be able to go stand in line somewhere and get hardware on day one in the UK?
Do you know what? I think this will be the first time that I might be tempted to do that. We do have a fairly big Apple shop in a shopping centre not far from me. Well, we've got two, one in Liverpool, one in Manchester. So I think if I wanted to take that route, I could. And uh-huh. I think probably this would be the first time I might be tempted to do that. When the original iPhone came out, I was working for a company called O2, which is similar to Verizon or AT&T. And for the first gen iPhone, at least, they had the exclusivity in the UK. So if you wanted an iPhone, you had to be on their network. And because I worked for them, it was very easy to get one. So I didn't have to worry about, you know, fighting the crowds in the Apple stores. I just got one through work. And then I've been lucky ever since to sort of, if I've needed one, to get one via their online shop and get in that first batch. But I think this time I probably, mm-hmm. you know, I think it's tempting to go and get in line. But I've seen on Twitter before, I think it was Dan Council, tweeted a picture or retweeted a picture of some people already queuing up. I was like, okay, that's a little bit, I'm not going to go now. You know, I'll probably go down the morning, see if I can get one. Because I think it would be nice to get one on day one rather than order one. But usually they do pre-orders a couple of weeks before as well, so they ship on the first day. So I don't know. We'll play it by ear and see how it pans out. I do want to get one as soon as they're available, though. I've got the money to one side for my royalties of the books last year, so that's all ready to go.
Uh-huh. That's WatchKit money, right? Or I guess Apple Watch money.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So in a short while, we're going to be joined by Dave Verwer, who is the chap behind iOS Dev Weekly. And when we arranged to have Dave on the podcast, it kind of got me thinking a little bit about, you know, that's like the go-to resource every week for the best developments within that past week in our sort of little community. But back when I started, probably about 2009, I kind of lived in this little bubble because I didn't have any friends or relatives that were iOS developers or getting into iOS development or even were developers of any kind. My background at the time was in database work, enterprise database work.
Sounds like you were hanging around with the wrong people, man.
Yeah, definitely. That's all obviously changed now. But the only site that I visited on a regular basis was Apple's documentation site and occasionally Stack Overflow. And that was really like the only two sites that I visited to get any information on what it was that I was doing at the time. And then I started building up this list of people that I followed on Twitter and got more and more information. And then, funnily enough, Dave was actually the first person that I met in the real world rather than a virtual one, who was also an iOS developer, because like we had one sort of cocoa meetup, NS Manchester, which isn't far from me, but it was a bit spotty as to whether it was on or not. And I know Auta, who was obviously had on the podcast, he did take over running it for a while, but he's since moved on as well. So there wasn't really anywhere for me to go and meet other iOS developers, or at least that I was aware of at the time. So I really struggled and probably was naive into that there was all these resources available. So I was kind of wondering how you found your way into, because I know you're a subscriber and you've had one of your own articles featured in one of the issues of iOS Dev Weekly. How you keep on top of all the latest developments, how you started doing that, and then obviously you became a subscriber of iOS Dev Weekly.
Yeah, I used to have, when Google Reader still existed, I had a huge list of blogs and other things. And so I'd read that every single day. And then at some point I heard about iOS Dev Weekly and I subscribed to it. And I found that there was a lot of the stuff that I thought was like the best stuff from my kind of list that I'd curated over the years was in there. And then when Google Reader went away, I never bothered resetting it up until just recently. But iOS Dev Weekly kind of basically filled in because I had kind of gained confidence in how good the curation was from Dave, just because, you know, I'd been reading a lot more, but all the best stuff did seem to end up in the weekly newsletter. And so I was like, well, and I just didn't feel the need as strongly to go and reset all those feeds up in some other service because, you know, I had iOS Dev Weekly. So, I mean, I was sold on it from early on just because I could kind of compare it to what the work I had been doing on my own in terms of finding good stuff, and it was really good. So I mean, I'm a game developer, so some of the game development stuff isn't as, I mean, there's some game development stuff in there, but it's not as much of a focus as I had focused on. But just in general, like if there was some great new open source library, you'd for sure hear about it there. So
did you not find that once you had all these feeds up that it became a little bit unmanageable because, like you said, there was no curation? I mean, how did you deal with that?
I just wasted a tremendous amount of time. Like, I just set it up again a few days ago just because there's some stuff I've just felt recently. Like, I used to know broader. Like, I would hear about stuff, cool stuff earlier, and now I hear about it eventually. But I kind of liked being on the front end of hearing about some of that stuff. So I reset it up just like maybe 2 weeks ago. And then I remembered why I kind of hadn't bothered, just because like every day I go in, like literally I'll go in 10 times a day and just go in and mark everything as read, because I'll just scan the headlines and by far the most of it's not that interesting, you know? So yeah, I spent a lot more time on it. And that was the other reason I didn't bother to set it up, is because I've been busier over the last 2 or 3 years and haven't really had as much time to just kind of learn new things and wander around on the internet trying to figure out what's out there.
And how was it having one of your own sort of posts? And this isn't a post on raywendelick.com, this is a post on your own blog featured in an issue of iOS Dev Weekly.
It was great, and I was shocked because my blog doesn't get a ton of traffic, and it was something about GPU image, and so the topic was kind of relevant to a good number of people. But I had only subscribed to the newsletter a few weeks before this, and then like the third or fourth newsletter I got in my email inbox, I was in it. So that was great. And I went to Cocoa Heads, my local Cocoa Heads, and people were like, "Oh, hey, we saw you in iOS Dev Weekly." So that was pretty cool. It was great. This was years ago, but it was a huge bump in traffic to that post. In fact, I get work from that and a few other related GPU image posts from people who find me through my blog. So it's fantastic.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I think as well, since we've started moving towards iOS Dev Weekly, that it's a great point to get Dave in. So welcome, Dave.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you both?
No, I'm doing really well. Doing really well.
Doing well.
I'm sure not many people are going to fall into this next category. But for anybody who's not heard of Dave Irwe, can you just explain sort of who is Dave Irwe?
I think there's probably quite a few who haven't heard of me. As you say, I write iOS Dev Weekly, and that's where most people would probably have heard of me from. But we've been... I own a small company in the north of England, very close to where you live, right, Mick? We were doing iOS stuff pretty much from the very beginning. We've developed some apps. We've done some contract work. We do a lot of training work as well. That's been my career for the last six or whatever years, however long the iPhone's been out. And we also do some Mac software and various other things as well. But certainly, yeah, iOS training and development has been mainly what we do.
So what was it that originally sort of attracted you into iOS development? How did you first get involved?
So we'd actually we'd started the company that I have now about a year before the announcement of the iPhone, and we'd started doing some stuff and we were doing some Mac development as well at the time, and then the iPhone got announced, and to me it just felt like something I had to do, you know. It felt like a huge opportunity, and of course it was a huge opportunity, and just fascinating to me as well. I couldn't not do iOS work. It was too tempting.
So I mean, that must have been a big change though, because if you'd only recently set the company up and then you know this whole new platform comes along, and you obviously had ideas of or visions of what you wanted that company to be pre-iOS, and then this new platform comes, and then you want to get straight on board, you know, a big change of plans.
It was a little bit of a risk, yep. But I'm a great believer in focus on what's working for you, and don't stick too hard to your kind of your plans that you make, because sometimes it's good just to kind of look at what's working, and in fact, I'd say generally it's good to look at what's actually working about what you're doing and kind of head in that direction. So, yeah, it was a little bit of a risk, but I think most people back then saw that it was such a big step forward that the risk was reasonably small.
In that spirit, Dave, what are you spending your time on these days? I know you've done contract work, you've done some training, you obviously make money on the newsletter. How do you distribute your time? What are you mostly working on these days?
So what we're actually doing mostly these days is, again, following our successes, which is, you know, obviously iOS Dev Weekly has been a bigger success than I could have ever wished for, really. And to support that, the publishing of that every week, it was quite a manual process that I was going through before we did this project, but we started building some software to just kind of help me out in publishing iOS Dev Weekly, and we've basically turned that into a product now where you can make a something weekly, or you know, weekly or monthly curated content newsletter. And so we're still doing a lot of iOS stuff, but we're pretty focused at the moment on getting this out onto the market and getting it launched and out there.
Is that brand new? Do you have clients already, or what's the status of that right now?
We do. So we launched a kind of preview release of it in August last year, and we've been getting clients on board from then until now. In fact, we're still just continuing now, you know. We launched in a kind of slightly different way to a lot of products these days, where the beta or whatever you call it is usually kind of free or something like that. We actually went completely the other way and charged up front for a year's worth of use with kind of a fairly high limit on the number of subscribers you could have. And certainly for kind of web software, kind of a premium price point. Because we wanted to get the feedback from people who would actually pay us money. And I think that's really, really important. We could have launched for free. We could have taken people on during the beta, and we certainly kind of could have taken those costs that would have come with that. But I think the feedback we would have gotten from those people would have been very different to the feedback we got from people who were actually kind of paying to be on the platform. But yeah, so we've been live, and we've got a good number of people who signed up during that period. But what we're doing right now is ending that. We called it the patron program instead of a beta, because actually the software wasn't beta. So it's kind of interesting, because I'd been using it for publishing iOS Dev Weekly for a good number of months before we even opened up to the patrons. The software, I knew that it did what it was supposed to do, because I'd been using it every week to publish iOS Dev Weekly. And so it didn't really feel like we were at beta. I mean, certainly we've come a long way since August, but it wasn't a half finished product. Yeah, now we're coming to the end of that patron program, and we're going to push it out to a wider audience for a more traditional kind of monthly pricing based on number of subscribers kind of thing.
I suppose as well, having pioneered it with iOS Dev Weekly, you must have had no concerns about whether or not it would scale, because you've got this huge existing base of subscribers that you were using to send that issue out to every week.
Sure, yeah. And I mean, it was actually a slightly sad day when I became not the largest list on our platform. Good in one way, a little bit of a personal disappointment in the other.
The RayWenderlich.com podcast will be right back. But first, a message from our sponsor.
Are you interested in promoting your tool or service to top iOS developers? The RayWenderlich.com podcast is a great place to advertise. We have an audience of more than 4,000 top iOS developers per episode, who are all dedicated to mastering their craft. To find out more about advertising on this podcast, please visit RayWenderlich.com/advertise. So that's what you're working on today, and that's where you spend all your time. But just going back a little bit, you know, what's the story behind iOS Dev Weekly? Where did it all start?
Sure. I was obviously keeping myself up to date, just like you were saying earlier. You know, you got your RSS, you're keeping yourself up to date, you read it every day. And I was doing that. And I was, at the time, a big fan of a couple of other newsletters that I was receiving. We also, most of our back-end stuff on the iOS side is all written in Ruby. So I was a subscriber to Ruby Weekly, which is effectively, a roundup of the week's Ruby news for delivered by email every week, you know? And so I was a big fan of that. Not only that content, but that as a format, it was very compelling to me that I didn't have to follow every single piece of Ruby news, because I could just kind of wait for that to come through every week and get the best of it, you know? And so I looked around for someone doing similar in the iOS space and couldn't find anybody. And so I thought, well, I wonder if I can do that. I had a very lucky kind of launch for it, really. I did a single tweet and got retweeted a few times, and 600 people signed up before I published issue one, which kind of really made me think I actually had to go ahead with it and do it. You know? if maybe 5 people had signed up, it might not be here today. But I threw a sign-up page up, and like I say, 600 people popped their email address in, and then it really had to go. So started publishing it, and it's just been an enormous success, way, way bigger than I could have ever imagined. But I really I just wanted to spread that information around. I was keeping myself up to date, so tell people about it.
No, that's great. And just sort of on the same lines there, I made a note of a question that I did want to ask you. Do you ever worry about that expectation or that burden of having to put out a new issue every week?
Yeah, I do. It's definitely a commitment. It's funny that the fear that I had when I first started it was that I wouldn't find enough content every week to link to. And actually, it's completely the opposite of that. There's so much amazing content being published on iOS and all the related subjects that the big challenge actually is trying to pick the right links, because I'm very keen not to expand the number of links in an issue, because I think my job is to take away certain links and kind of give, I was going to say the best of, actually, but that's not what it is. It's the only way that I've ever been able to do this, and it seems to have worked okay so far, is just by posting the links that I'm personally interested in. I have quite a broad interest in iOS development. It's obviously the code stuff, but also the kind of business and marketing side, the, you know, all lots of the design side, lots of quite broad interest in that community. So I basically post what I'm personally interested in. And of course, that means some stuff that's fantastic I have to pass over, because there's just way too much amazing content to put in every week.
Do you ever feel like you miss a story, like after, like you just didn't hear about it in time, and then after the fact it's too late, but it's like, oh, that would have been the, like, I would have put that story in, but it yeah. just, I didn't know about it in time.
Yeah. The one I find kind of difficult, like the news stuff tends to be, I don't miss a huge amount of that, because it tends to get linked to a lot on Twitter and that kind of thing. But there's just so many GitHub projects, blog posts about Swift and blog posts about all sorts of iOS development, that I do, of course, miss some of that. So it's just a, like, I guess I do my best to keep up, but it's a pretty challenging task to read everything. Yeah. And I definitely have missed things that I would have linked to, but to be honest, it doesn't hugely matter, because there's next week, right?
Yeah. Yeah. There's always more, right? Yeah. Especially when there's so much that you can't, yeah, you can't get it all. You're like, well, something's got to get cut. So
yeah. Although one thing I do, which is I have to force myself to do this, is if it doesn't get linked to in a week, I have started to make myself just push it to one side, because there'll be it, like that problem just gets worse and worse the longer you go on. And so I very occasionally move something out and I'll put it in the next issue. But generally it's on a Friday afternoon, I've got zero items in my kind of queue of stuff to link to.
Are you ever tempted to kind of publish here's the things that didn't make the cut? Or do you get people asking you for, you know, insight on stuff that didn't quite make it in?
Yeah, that's come up a few times. I also occasionally get people suggesting that I do iOS Dev Daily, which is, on the record, never going to happen. I can't imagine doing something like that daily.
Well, I think part of the charm of iOS Dev Weekly is the fact that it is curated. And I think over time, the people that read it have got a trust with you, that the stuff that you pick out is the stuff that's relevant, is the stuff that they're going to be interested in. So I think if you move from that to daily and just kind of started, your curation would slip, because you'd be just taking, it'd be more about volume rather than quality.
I think it would, I think it's very tempting to wish for that. I think the reality of it would not be anywhere near as successful, because I think there would just be an overwhelming amount of stuff to read, and it would actually become less useful if I did it daily. But on the record, never going to happen daily.
I think with anything like that, the value of the curator is he's kind of signaling to you what you can ignore, right? Like, here's what you need to know about, and then if it's not in here, then maybe it's not as important. And obviously, it has something to do with your particular taste, or whether it matches, you know, me as a reader. But I felt like by the time I kind of let some of my daily routine of just reading all this stuff go, I had got to the point where I trusted you and your taste, and I thought, well, if it's going to be important to me, it'll be in iOS Dev Weekly. So I think that's part of the value, is this thing where it's like, you don't have to read everything.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. The other thing that the fact that it's weekly allows me to do is, if a story kind of comes up and I think, oh, that's interesting, sometimes that story or blog post or whatever develops during the week, and the fact that it's only weekly gives me a chance to not just by kind of instinct or gut feeling just go, okay, this is interesting, let's post it. It actually gives me a little time to think about it and think whether it is really interesting rather than just kind of, oh yeah, that's cool, post it, you know?
So how early do you start preparing for each week's issue? Or is it like literally as soon as one's out the door, you're already straight on the next one?
So the kind of collection process is ongoing. I have obviously a good set of RSS feeds, which I'm constantly adding and kind of pruning, because otherwise that in itself would get overwhelming. So my RSS feeds are constantly changing. But a lot of the links that I get are straight off Twitter. I follow a good set of people on Twitter. And if a blog post gets linked to once, then I'll skim it and have a look whether it's generally interesting. And what I've got quite good at doing is pretty quickly sensing whether I'm interested in it without having to read every word of it, because I would literally do nothing else. So I've got quite a good sense now of the kind of thing I like to link to. And so that collection process goes on throughout the week. Every time I browse Twitter, one of the features we added to our curated software actually is something as a direct result of this, which is we have an email address that I can email a link to, and it goes straight into kind of my system. And so if I'm ever on Twitter, I'll be skimming through articles, and everyone that's even vaguely interesting just gets emailed off to this email address. And then by Thursday night, I've got usually 40, 45 links, something like that. And at that point, it's time to read those properly and see which ones I'm going to link to.
You mentioned curated. Let's talk a little bit more about that. If I'm interested in using curated, if I've got an idea for a new newsletter I want to put together, can you tell me some of the advantages of using curated versus just using like MailChimp or some of these other services that have been around forever?
Sure. The basic idea of it is that it's the whole process for making this specific type of email. If you want to make your regular kind of marketing email, MailChimp is a better product for that. Go use MailChimp. But if you want to make something that's about curated content, that is like basically a list of links that you're going to add some commentary to, we cover that whole process right from collecting those links using a various different mechanisms for that email that I mentioned is one of them, through to the writing process is very focused on this format of email. And so you're not trying to design a new email every week. The template doesn't change. All you get is your links, and obviously we know they're links, and so you don't have to insert the link in the email or anything like that. You've just got it straight from your kind of collected bookmarks into the issue, and then you just write a paragraph of text underneath it and hit publish. But it's more than an email application. It does of course send the email, but it also builds you a archives website, which is not, you know, a lot of these email products, they stick the table laden HTML of the email, because that's what you've got to do for email clients, just stick it on a web page and that's your archive. We build from the same data a nice clean semantic website from that same data, so it's searchable, it gets indexed nicely by Google, that kind of stuff. And then we're also doing different kinds of subscription mechanisms. So probably about a year ago, something like that, we launched the ability to, on iOS Dev Weekly, to subscribe via a Safari push notification. And that's something that, you know, we built into Curated as well.
So I know, Dave, we've already talked about what a huge commitment running a high-profile newsletter is and sort of the significant amount of time it takes up. And I know you compensate that some way by advertising, and you've had some pretty high profile sponsors on iOS Dev Weekly, and you do the job ads as well.
Sure.
If anybody was thinking about starting up their own newsletter and potentially using Curated as a service, can you sort of offer any advice on probably the first point would be to, you know, how do you go about attracting sponsors, and then secondly how to build a relationship and keep them coming back?
Sure. I think the answer to this question is really, really simple. When I started iOS Dev Weekly, there was no intention at all to make any money off it. There was an intention to raise my profile a little bit, and that was certainly one of the reasons that I did it. But the focus of it at the beginning and now is provide the best quality information for your subscribers. And when it came to sponsorship, I've never kind of looked for a sponsor at all. Companies started approaching me because they'd heard of iOS Dev Weekly. And so I actually said no to sponsorship for quite a while because I was actually a little bit nervous about turning it into something commercial. I thought that might affect people's opinion of it. So I said no to sponsorship for quite a while. But eventually I did think, well, it's taking up a fair amount of my time every week. And at the time, because I wasn't really earning any money from it, I was doing it effectively in my spare time, evenings, and that kind of stuff. And it was getting a little bit to the point where I wanted to kind of dedicate some more time to it in, I guess, regular hours. And so I took some sponsorship. And actually, the reaction to it was incredibly positive. And I got lots of email from people saying, I'm really glad you've started taking sponsorship because this means it's not going away. we now know that you're going to continue doing this because it's going to earn some money from it. Yeah, the sponsorship came quite naturally. And I think if anyone is planning to kind of do this and earn some money from it, I don't think you need to wait as long as I did for sponsorship. I think I had about 10,000 subscribers when I took my first sponsor. But you do need to focus entirely on the quality of content because that's what keeps people clicking through. And when people click through, of course, they're going to also click through on the sponsored link. And that's why the sponsorship has been so successful on iOS Dev Weekly.
Fantastic. Now, we're just about out of time, but I do have one more question that I want to ask you. Now, David Smith posted recently an article on his blog about manipulating the status bar on the Apple Watch Simulator for prettier screenshots. I'm sure you can see where this is leading. I'm a huge fan of Status Magic. I know it's no longer available, but is there a chance we could see a version of Status Magic for the Apple Watch?
I think it's probably a little bit unlikely, just because we are pretty busy with the other stuff right now. I'd love to. I think it would... the reason I built Status Magic is because seeing a messy status bar on an App Store screenshot drives me crazy. And you look at the care and attention that Apple pay to their website and their marketing materials, and you would never see a single iPhone shot without the 941 and the clean status bar. And so that kind of drove me to the idea for Status Magic. It was a tool that we needed, basically. And so I'm sure it will drive me crazy when I see the Apple Watch screenshots. And I guess it depends how crazy it drives me, whether we see a one for Apple Watch. But yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And like I say, we'll wrap things up there. Thanks again for joining us, Dave.
No problem at all. Thank you very much for having me on.
No, it's been our pleasure. I'm sure everybody's getting sick of me putting out a call for feedback. We've done it really pushed it last couple of episodes, but it is really important to us. We have received some positive feedback, but we would like to hear more. As I said, this is episode 7, so we're coming up to the end of season 3. We're going to get together after the season's finished and look at what went well, what didn't go well, where we can improve, and we're going to base all that on the feedback that you send us. So if you do want to get in touch and tell us what's working, what's not working, it's podcast@raywendellick.com. And obviously, if you do like the episodes, then please do leave reviews on iTunes because it all helps. We hope you've enjoyed this episode. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
And that's a wrap. Thanks again, everybody, for listening to the RayWendellick.com podcast. We hope you enjoyed it, and don't forget to leave a rating on iTunes. See you next time.